Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Targeted Talks. I'm your host, Nicole Tucker. In this episode, I am talking to Dr. Christy Hilton, a medical oncologist at Allegheny Clinic Medical Oncology, about treating first and second line HER2-positive breast cancer. Right now, in HER2-positive breast cancer. So Dr. Hilton, aside from HER2 itself, what are the key biomarkers to look for in metastatic breast cancer?
Metastatic breast cancer, in general, we would check a lot of different things. So we would check definitely germline sequencing, and that would be important mainly for BRCA mutations, which would allow us to utilize PARP inhibitors in treatment, which are category one for treatment of metastatic breast cancer, like olaparib or talazoparib for BRCA1 and BRCA2 mutations. We would also check for PIK3CA activating mutations, which can be checked by PCR. We would also check for PD-L1 expression by IHC, which would allow us to utilize immunotherapy in metastatic breast cancer. With all metastatic breast cancers, we check for MSI, mismatch repair, and tumor mutational burden. And that's basically for all solid tumors along with NTRK fusions, because those are all things that you can open up to different situations where you can use immunotherapy or targeted therapy just for certain circumstances.
In terms of frontline treatment, how do you use pertuzumab, trastuzumab, and chemotherapy?
Looking at frontline therapy for metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer, there's no direct way that you do it. You have to approach it by looking at if the patient was treated in the past, and if they were, what did they receive and when did they receive it? So if they had, say, neoadjuvant and their adjuvant treatment, it would be important to know what did they receive and when did they receive it. And that's important because, you know, in this day and age, with HER2 therapy, they often will get neoadjuvant treatment, and then with the Catherine trial, they often will get T-DM1 in the adjuvant setting. So that makes a difference in what you would use if they relapsed, say, 3 years down the road after they received that T-DM1, or if they relapsed within 6 months. So it makes a difference what they received, or if they received anything at all, and then when they received it. So if you're looking at a patient who has not received anything before, meaning this is a de novo metastatic breast cancer that was just diagnosed, or they've received treatment for an early stage breast cancer and they relapsed, but it's over 6 months ago that they completed their adjuvant treatment, well, then you're treating them really as a true first line treatment. And for that approach, we typically would use trastuzumab plus pertuzumab in combination with a taxane. And that taxane is typically docetaxel or paclitaxel. In my clinic, I tend to use weekly paclitaxel over docetaxel because it tends to be a little less toxic and better tolerated. But docetaxel is completely, it's the one that was actually studied in the trials. It just tends to be a little bit more difficult to tolerate. But that is your standard first-line treatment in someone who had de novo metastatic HER2-positive disease or HER2-positive disease that has relapsed after 6 months after their adjuvant treatment. If they relapse before that, then you use more your second line and third line treatments.
Thank you. And what research supports this frontline strategy?
Trastuzumab, pertuzumab with a taxane. We know that is a combination that works from the CLEOPATRA trial. And the CLEOPATRA trial was a phase 3 trial that included over 800 women with HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer. And it treated all 800 women with docetaxel and trastuzumab. And then it took half of the women and gave them the addition of pertuzumab, and the other half were randomized to receive placebo only. And it was given all three drugs, either trastuzumab, docetaxel, and pertuzumab, or trastuzumab docetaxel placebo were given until disease progression or intolerable side effects. And what they found is after 19 months of follow-up, the addition of pertuzumab to the docetaxel and trastuzumab resulted in an overall response rate of 80 versus 69%, which was significant in comparison to the placebo. So that really showed us that adding pertuzumab to the standard of care docetaxel and trastuzumab backbone really makes a difference. So the overall response rate jumping from 69% to 80%, and then in addition, the progression-free survival in that trial went from 12 months up to 19 months, which was also significant. And then that trial had updated results at 30 months of follow-up, and it showed that the addition of pertuzumab had an improvement in overall survival compared to placebo of 57 versus 41 months. So that was also significant. Now, with the addition of pertuzumab, it does for sure improve, you know, all of those parameters, the response rate, the progression-free survival, and the overall survival, but it doesn't come without a cost, just like everything. The things that it added in terms of toxicity was diarrhea, neutropenia, and rash for the most part. But as medical oncologists, we're very used to working with pertuzumab. It's been around for quite some time, and those are all expected and side effects that we're used to managing.
Can you discuss the introduction of tucatinib in the frontline setting?
Right. So tucatinib is a really exciting compound. And tucatinib is it's an oral tyrosine kinase inhibitor, and it's selective for the kinase domain of HER2 with minimal inhibition of the epidermal growth factor receptor. And it was studied in the trial called HER2 CLIMB. And this was a really pivotal trial because it was the first trial to allow women with brain mets that were untreated into the study. And this study was very important because of that reason. And so the study looked at utilizing tucatinib, capecitabine, and trastuzumab in metastatic breast cancer. And it what it did is it looked at those women in later lines of treatment, and it looked at 480 heavily pretreated women, all having HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer. They had a median of 4 prior lines of therapy, and the one-year progression-free survival rates were 33% among patients receiving the tucatinib arm versus 12% in those receiving just the CAPE and trastuzumab arm only. And when you look at that, it doesn't look quite that impressive, but when you look at those who had brain metastasis, the one-year progression-free survival rate for those women without tucatinib was dismal. So without tucatinib, it was 0%, the one-year progression-free survival rate, and was 25% in those that had received tucatinib. So it was very active in those women that had brain metastasis. So because of that data showing that it had so much activity, there are clinical trials going on right now looking at tucatinib in moving it up to those women with residual disease in the adjuvant setting. So there's clinical trials going on right now looking at pulling that up for women that have residual disease after neoadjuvant therapy, because unfortunately, 30% of women will have relapse of disease with HER2 positive disease with early stage breast cancer. And so the thought is using this in an earlier setting, perhaps you can stop the development of brain metastasis in HER2 positive disease. So I think that that's a really exciting clinical trial that's ongoing right now. So it'll be exciting to see what happens with that. But also because of HER2 Climb, using tucatinib with capecitabine and trastuzumab is an option if you have patients with metastatic disease that have brain metastasis, that you want to use this in an earlier setting in their metastatic process instead of saving it for the second or third line.
Is there a subgroup of patients that you would choose to treat with other therapies in the frontline setting?
I think exciting in the second line therapy are the is the FAM trastuzumab deruxtecan or Enhertu. So that is approved in the second line setting. So that's also called T-DXd, and that's an antibody drug conjugate that's composed of an anti-HER2 antibody, a cleavable tetrapeptide-based linker and a topoisomerase 1 inhibitor. And that is approved by the FDA for use in adult patients with unresectable or metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer that have received prior anti-HER2-based regimen in the metastatic or in the neoadjuvant setting who have developed progression during or within the first 6 months of completing their therapy. And that's based on a single arm phase two trial where they looked at 112 patients with a median of 6 prior lines of treatment. And what they found was this drug was very active. So heavily pretreated patient population, and the median progression-free survival with this drug was 16 months, which is amazing when you think about a heavily pretreated population. It does have some side effects. The one that people worry about the most is the pneumonitis. And so we all know that we have to monitor the signs and symptoms, including cough, dyspnea, fever, and any kind of worsening respiratory status really closely. But that can be monitored closely with pulmonology, and with careful watching these patients while they're on treatment. There's also, if you're able to really monitor their symptoms closely and get them steroids quickly in their treatment, then you should be able to catch that early. But this is a really exciting drug that works very well for heavily pretreated patients. So using that in earlier lines of therapy is very exciting also.
Thank you, Dr. Hilton. We'll be right back after this message. The September 2022 special report from Targeted Oncology features Dr. Allison O'Neill of Dana-Farber Cancer Institute and is about treating pediatric patients with cancer after the COVID-19 pandemic. Visit www.targetedonc.com/news/special reports to read the article now. We're back with Dr. Christy Hilton. Moving along to the second line setting, how do you approach treatment of these patients and what factors are important for your treatment decisions?
So I think it matters a lot of different things. So what is the patient's pace of disease? Are they ER positive? What other comorbidities do they have? Obviously, if they have, a lot of respiratory illness, perhaps FAM, trastuzumab, deruxtecan might be something that you're not going to choose for them. Do they have, what other drugs have they seen that you can't repeat? If they received T-DM1 in the adjuvant setting and they've relapsed quickly, you're not going to choose that. You would choose Enhertu in the second line. The presence or absence of brain metastasis would perhaps lead you to use tucatinib. If they've already seen that, perhaps you would use your neratinib and capecitabine. So I think the most exciting thing is that there are so many options now in a HER2 positive space that you really have options for these women to use. But I think so much goes into making these decisions, and it really matters on the specific woman and what she's received, the pace of her disease and her other comorbidities.
Also in the second line, is there a current standard of care? And how do you see this shifting with upcoming clinical trial results?
there are a lot of there are a lot of clinical trials in this space, and I think that it is super important that we all try to get our patients on clinical trials. I think that that's the only way that we're going to answer these really important questions. So we know that when there is when there are options, that means that there is no one great answer. And so I think that with clinical trials, it's going to open up additional options and allow us to figure out what is the best treatment in which space. And I think that with new combinations and new therapies, I think that it's super important that we get these clinical trials out into all of our clinics and try to get our patients on as many clinical trials as we can, so that we can get more of these therapies available for our patients.
Looking forward. Dr. Hilton, what key challenges do you still face when treating a patient with HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer?
Right. So HER2-positive disease has come such a long way. When you look at the amount of therapies that have been approved in the past decade and how well, the survival has, become and how well these women do that have HER2-positive disease. But it's not good enough. And I think that when you look at the brain metastasis space, we're definitely doing better, but I think that that is the big challenge. HER2-positive disease likes to eventually go to the brain, and I think that that is one of the big challenges with HER2-positive disease. So I think that the work that the researchers are doing in that space is amazing, and I'm excited to see what comes out next in terms of brain metastasis and leptomeningeal disease.
What ongoing research have you seen that shows promise for the future of treatment?
I'm very excited to see the additional studies with tucatinib that are ongoing in the adjuvant space. I'm very excited to see what new compounds are coming out in different combinations. So I think the next couple years are going to be very exciting for the HER2 space.